this is Sally and welcome to Reclaiming Pride, LGBT plus survivors of narcissistic abuse. Before we start, there is a trigger warning. The episodes of this podcast may at times refer to domestic violence, emotional, financial, and sexual abuse. To begin, as always, I'd like us to start with a one-word feelings check. That means, what's one word for how you are feeling right now? Not how other people around you are feeling, or how people you may be caring for are feeling, but how are you feeling right now, in one word? This episode, we'll be talking about something which someone who's never been in a toxic relationship may not understand. When we miss the narcissist or toxic person. Put simply, if the relationship with the narcissist was always 100% awful all of the time, there wouldn't have been any reason or incentive for us to stay. But the narcissist is much smarter than that. What they do is they set up wonderful times with intermittent reinforcement, and I also have an episode on that, whereby they make us think that they're about to change, that everything will finally be normal, like you've always been hoping for. Then, once they've sucked you back in with this lie, they'll switch it all off again and return to their cycle of abuse. Repeating this cycle of intermittent reinforcement creates something called trauma bonding. Trauma bonding is a deep attachment that develops from a cycle of physical and/or emotional trauma followed by positive reinforcement. The narcissist keeps giving and then they keep snatching it away. The more awful the bad times are, and they will grow increasingly awful as the narcissist push boundaries further and further, the better the opposite behavior will seem in contrast. Therefore, the narcissist can actually not even be treating you very well, but it will seem wonderful and amazing compared to what you've just been enduring for, say, the past few weeks, for example. The more often someone survive each time this is done to them, the stronger the trauma bond will become. As you can probably hear, this is a form of brainwashing, and it's very much like being in a cult in its insipid control. The narcissist is literally building new habits. In other words, they are building new neural pathways, because that's what habits are. They're neural pathways that are physically built in your brain. The survivor who has been in a close relationship with a narcissist, particularly in an intimate relationship, has literally had their brain chemistry and wiring altered by this person. This is not an exaggeration. This is fact. Surviving, leaving, and moving forward from a relationship like this is not at all like an ordinary breakup. There is massive trauma to the brain and body. There is also all of those intermittent, wonderful memories that you do share with that person, which can be even more confusing and make a survivor feel extremely off balance. Why am I missing my abuser? This person was a monster. It's extremely confusing. In my own experience, even while I've been doing this podcast, I can tell you now that I have had dreams with my ex, and they're not all bad ones. I have moments where I might laugh to myself in private about a joke we shared when something triggers a memory. There are times I remember the amazing moments we had as well, and it can be extremely confusing. That's because you've been in a relationship with somebody who is mentally unstable and abusive. They are mentally ill, and you withstood their incurable illness for as long as you could, and that is the reality. This will be extremely confusing for anyone who is a caring, loving person, and it's exactly that sort of person that the narcissist will attach themselves to, and that is you. So to recap so far, the narcissist creates a trap of frequent abuse mixed with inconsistent praise or intermittent reinforcement and love. Because love is so rare in this relationship, it feels like gold to the victim whenever it finally gets here. But don't be fooled. It's actually not pure love. It's a mask of love. It's someone pretending to be loving. This person, don't forget, doesn't have the capacity to do that. This so-called love and praise feel like treasures to a victim that they've earned from their abuser. Like you're being thrown crumbs or something. When you receive it, it means there's still hope. It can feel like putting up with the abuse was all worth it for this moment of so-called love. This is why victims become so attached to narcissistic abusers, even to the point of missing them when they're gone. The reality that the abuser created for them was so strong that they still crave the loving moments long after they've mustered the strength to leave. In addition to all of this, narcissists are literally so time-consuming. And mind you, this is probably actually something they've accused you of being or projected onto you, right? Oh, you take up so much of my time. You're so needy. You are constantly walking on eggshells around this person, trying to work out what mood they're in, what you've done wrong, what they will be like when you get home or when they get home, double thinking anything and everything you say or write to them in text or email. The list goes on and on and on, and it's exhausting, extremely time consuming. So let's think about, once this person who sucked the life and time out of you is gone, you're left with not only trauma, but a huge void. Not only a void of all of the chemicals that are now not being set off in your brain, but a void of time. The cycle of all of this starts to become very familiar to you. It starts to become your life. You never know when the good time's going to come around again, so you're constantly chasing it, constantly thinking it's just around the corner, like a gambler waiting for their next big win. Maybe today I might win. Maybe today I might win them over. The problem is that we often focus on the good times of the past, and toxic relationships are no exception, believe it or not. Here's another term that you may or may not have heard before: euphoric recall. So euphoric recall is a state in which we remember the past through rose-colored glasses. This addictive thinking exaggerates a positive experience, but fails to bring up the negative side, all of the good and none of the bad. Those quote unquote good days were amazing, weren't they? In the state of euphoric recall, we recall specific memories with excessive fondness, and that can trigger the body's biochemical reaction. Negative aspects of this past vanish while the positives are embellished. Euphoric recall can lead to a chemical condition in the brain known as anhedonia. Prolonged periods flooded with high stress chemical levels like cortisol when the abuse is in full swing, then the intermittent reinforcement, those good moments, are concocted by the narcissist, and then you get a high, and that creates dopamine and serotonin in your brain and in your gut. Because actually, serotonin is not created in the brain. It's created in the gut. And this can lead to anhedonia. In this state, a person is unable to gain pleasure from regular activities. So in other words, you've been on such a kind of a roller coaster, then it's like someone putting you on a kind of a little kiddie swing and saying, here, get the same kind of thrill out of this. And it's just not going to happen because you've literally been on a roller coaster ride with this person for however long you've been. And the longer you've been with them, the worse it is. And so you can't be expected, in a sense, to suddenly go back to normal. Your body, your brain, your gut is still craving those hits of dopamine, those hits of serotonin, even though the cortisol levels might not be as high. And so the body is just, it just can't level itself out. Anhedonia is also common for those in early recovery from drug addiction. Many people feel emotionally numb, and life can seem boring without the substance use or extreme acts. So in this case, substitute substance abuse or extreme acts for the toxic or narcissistic person. Ultimately, anhedonia can lead to engaging in risky behavior in the hope of feeling something once again. Does any of this sound familiar to you? Do any of these feelings sound familiar? If it does, this is because, as I mentioned earlier, your brain has been turned into that of a traumatized person who is also addicted to the high of the intermittent reinforcement crumbs that were dealt out to you by the narcissist. So what does this all mean? Well, what it means is that your body is craving this unhealthy hit while your brain is remembering the so-called good times. That, plus the low self-esteem that the narcissist has manufactured within you, is the perfect recipe for missing an abuser. So here's a key thing that I want you to remember. I do not, and you do not, miss the narcissist. You miss who you thought they were. You miss who you needed and wanted them to be. I'm going to say that again. A key thing to remember is you do not miss the narcissist. You miss who you thought they were. You miss who you needed and wanted them to be. So how can we get through this? It might be helpful to remember what was bad in the relationship and why it ended. Acceptance is the biggest step towards moving on. Accept the fact that the person you miss is a narcissist, not a healthy individual. Narcissists don't have the capacity to love. They came into relationships to use and abuse you and leave you behind. This person has a personality disorder that is incurable, and therefore all hope of normalcy with this individual is futile. It may help you to look back at a journal entry or something that you had at the time that would remind you of how bad it was, anything you have from that time, which will remind you of the misery. If you don't have anything like this, it can really help to listen to things like this podcast. It will help to reaffirm that you are not the only one going through this, and that you will hear that their behaviors and your trauma are validated. I honestly believe that we need to speak more on this in the LGBT plus community as people struggle with narcissistic partners, friends, and family members just as much as heterosexual people do. So what are some of the things that we can do? Remind yourself why you left in whatever way is open to you. Listen to this podcast, read more on NPD and abuse, talk to trusted people who know you well and may even have known you while you were with the narcissist. Validate your feelings. What you are feeling is normal, and this is an extremely hard thing to go through. Let go of self-blame. You spent long enough being blamed by your narcissistic partner, friend, or family member. There was never anything you could have done better. You did all you could, and it never would have been good enough anyway. Cut off contact with this person. Or if you have children together or pets together, keep all contact that you have to have with them to an absolute minimum and practice the Grey Rock method. I've talked about the Grey Rock method in earlier episodes of this podcast as well. In short, the recovery stage from a narcissistic relationship certainly does not happen overnight. For some people, it might take years. This stage involves learning about mind control, psychopaths, sociopaths, narcissists, and understanding what specifically was done to you, what techniques were used, and what effects these had on your beliefs, thoughts, decisions, emotions, and behaviors. This is where it's definitely worth seeking a professional counselor to help you through this process. Your ability to think and your belief system would have been grossly distorted by the narcissist. Having a professional help you to sort through these things can save you years of heartache and further pain. Remember, for you, there is absolute hope of full recovery. For the narcissist, there is not and never will be. As I stated earlier on, it's not the narcissist you miss. It's the person you always hoped they would turn into. This kind, funny, loving person never existed. It was an illusion created by somebody who is pathologically empty inside and devoid of empathy and the capacity to even love. As your healing moves forward, you will see this more and more clearly. The more you see it, the more your brain will grow accustomed to this as a reality, and new neural pathways, in other words, new habits, will be built in the peace that you deserve. So I hope that this has helped to shed some light on the very common occurrence that we may even feel ashamed of, missing the narcissist or toxic person. So having said all of that, let's take a moment to regroup, and I'll be back after this short break with a listener question. I'll see you in a minute. Welcome back. This week's listener question is, what is more dangerous, malignant narcissism or antisocial personality disorder? This is a really tough one. I know I did a whole episode on the spectrum of narcissistic personality disorder as well. So if you haven't heard that one, you might want to listen to that before you listen to the answer to this question, because I do sort of reference the spectrum of narcissism and also the spectrum of ASPD. So that's antisocial personality disorder. So psychopathy comes under the umbrella of antisocial personality disorder. It's one of the aspects of that spectrum. So what we're really asking about is, does this piece of the narcissistic spectrum overlap with that piece of the ASPD spectrum? So that's really what the question is. So as I said, psychopathy is a subcondition of antisocial personality disorder. So some say every psychopath by definition is also a narcissist because it's kind of built in to their illness. A malignant narcissist is the most extreme end of the NPD spectrum. If you think of it kind of on a scale of 1 through 10, then a malignant narcissist would be a 10. So malignant narcissism is the last point in NPD before you start to merge into ASPD, antisocial personality disorder. So a malignant narcissist practically really is a narcissist with aspects of antisocial personality disorder. So basically, in some ways, they overlap and can be the same or very similar in some aspects. As I've said in previous episodes, the B clusters work like a Venn diagram. So the B cluster personality disorders are like a Venn diagram. At certain points, they veer off from one another and have very specific traits that are specific to that disorder. So, for example, there are some traits that are specific to histrionic personality disorder or borderline personality disorder or narcissistic personality disorder. And then at some points, they intersect. Malignant narcissism and ASPD intersect the most of any NPD type in the NPD spectrum. Malignant narcissists really, their behavior is more sociopathic as far as violence is concerned, for example. Malignant narcissism is essentially a blend of narcissism and aspects of antisocial personality disorder. Basically, a malignant narcissist says things like, I am everything and you are nothing. A malignant narcissist lies without remorse and completely obliterates his victim's self-worth, just like a psychopath. NPD and ASPD share quite a bit in common. Both sets of people with both personality disorders often lack empathy, suspect other people's ill intentions when they don't exist, and are very shallow. They're also callous and unforgiving and tend to exploit other people. In these ways, they're both equally dangerous. So in these aspects where they overlap, they are basically both equally as dangerous as each other. So the DSM-5 diagnostic manual distinguishes between antisocial and narcissistic personality disorders. It notes that the narcissistic personality disorder is not typically associated with a history of criminality in adulthood or conduct disorder in childhood. The NPD person is less likely to be associated with aggression, impulsiveness, and deceit, which better tend to categorize the ASPD person. However, you may have been with a narcissist. You may have been with somebody who has NPD, who is very aggressive, who is extremely impulsive and deceitful. So that's, you see what I mean? These are things which can be specifically tied to an individual. Sometimes these things differ quite wildly depending on the person. Another way to distinguish the two is to note that ASPD people do not require admiration and do not envy other people to the same extent that narcissists do. So this is something which is particularly akin to narcissistic personality disorder. They need this kind of endless barrage of talking them up from you and from those closest to them constantly. And if they don't get it, it will be a problem. Psychopaths and people with ASPD don't tend to need that. So the short answer is there are differences between them for sure. And it's those differences that make the person on the ASPD spectrum more dangerous than the malignant narcissist. But as you see, not by much. And in certain ways, they can be, as I've said, equally as threatening. So it just really depends. It can actually come down to the individual and how much that person's behavior overlaps. So I hope this helped to answer your question, listener. If you would like to ask a question and have it answered here, you can post it on the Instagram or Facebook accounts for this podcast, and they're linked on the website banner. Please note, this podcast is not intended to replace professional therapy or counselling. It serves as a supplementary resource for support and encouragement. Listeners, you are encouraged to seek professional help if needed. I did, and it still works for me every day. Stay tuned, and I look forward to healing with you again next time. Bye-bye.